The Canadian radio industry is a male-dominated industry. I don't think there is more than one or two women who actually own and operate radio stations in this country. Women are employed in the business, but the glass ceiling is very low. Most women don't make it above assistant program director positions. The woman I am sitting with today took that glass ceiling and smashed it to pieces. Sushma Datt, who is the proprietor of RJ1200 and IT Productions here in Burnaby, BC, started on a long and winding road. Sushma, can you tell us how you got interested in becoming a journalist and then a broadcaster? And when?
Well, I was very young when I went into a radio studio in Africa and looked at this huge microphone. I must be about 8 or 10 years old, and big reel-to-reels where our drama was being recorded, and I was so fascinated by it. I'm not a very good student, so my father knew the principal. I was allowed to participate in this particular play, and all I had to do was say one line in it. And I practiced that line the whole week, and when it was my turn to talk, I fumbled because I was so excited. And all I had to say was, look at that mouse eating the laddu. And I said it in 3-4 different ways in my head. So when it was time for me to say, I fumbled. And I was so disappointed. And everybody went, ah. And then I came home a week later when that thing was on air. Fluff wasn't there because they made me do the whole thing 2-3 times. And I thought, what a magical world. You know, you can be in this world, say something which is not right, and it can be erased. And I think that was my love affair with broadcasting. In those days, I didn't know how to go into a school of broadcasting or something like that. But I was very fond of writing always. So I started writing short stories, started writing small pieces for Times of India publication, but all in Hindi. And so that was my beginning with journalism. And as I joined the BBC as a typist, because I was looking for a job, we had moved to England. I went to the Indian High Commission thinking, I'm Indian High Commission, they'll give me a job. And my typing speeds weren't good because I was not, you know, a great typist. So the guy says to me, why don't you practice a little bit more and then come back? So right next to the Indian High Commission was the BBC's Overseas Service. So I walk in there, put in an application, by mistake wrote my English typing speeds in the column of languages. And so Hindi typing, 40 words per minute, and they were looking for a Hindi typist at the BBC. So within a week, I get a letter asking for an interview. So I go for an interview, and it was the most amazing interview. Here I am sitting with Miss Gamer, I still remember her name, and my future boss, Charles McClelland, and she asks me, what sort of typewriter have you been typing on? You know, it's not the same keys, because Hindi doesn't have the same keys. It has accents, so carriage doesn't move, so they're dead keys. So I'm thinking, I don't know what she's asking. So I said, we typed on Royal. That's what I learned it on. I didn't know they made typewriters, meaning Hindi typewriter. So I said, I know they do. I worked on it. So I said, would you like to, and after a long interview, they said, would you like to come and, you know, have a look at the typewriter? And I'm thinking, what could be so different about this typewriter? And it was a Hindi typewriter. Now, I remember her saying, you know, they don't have the same keyboard. So I said, it looks different. Put in a piece of paper and typed God only knows what. And she said, so? And I said, No, I've never typed on a typewriter like this. No, I don't think, you know, it's the same. So she was very disappointed. They'd been looking for a Hindi typist for 2 years. So I said, but it's not that difficult. I can learn it within a couple of weeks. At that point, feeling the job, you know, slip away from my hand. And so the Charles McLennan said, that's okay, we'll let you know. So they went and told the Hindi producers, and I have a picture of them all up there. And one of them on the left side, Pushottam Pava, says to the boss, he says, well, she said she would do it, so get her back. Maybe her Hindi is good. And if her Hindi is good, maybe we can train her. So another 3-4 days later, I get another letter saying, would you please come for an interview, second interview? Everybody thinking, that's it, she's got a job. But what sort of a job? I don't know how to type in Hindi. And then I went and he asked me to type, write a few Hindi words. My Hindi was very good. A bachelor's in Hindi from Allahabad University. He was very impressed and he said, would you stay here and learn to type? And I said, I'd love to. And my boss knew that I was BSing my way through. So he gave me 6 months to learn typing. And that's how I got into the BBC, which gave me an opportunity to work with some of the finest broadcasters.
And they still are.
And they are. Fantastic. Some of them have passed on. But BBC is a place where, you know, if you've had your training at the BBC, I mean, they teach you everything. So that's how I started. And my very first program was only 5 minutes.
You were on the air for 5 minutes.
5 minutes. There was, the BBC is predominantly a news-oriented entity, and I was bored with news, so I said there has to be some entertainment. And they said, okay, we don't have much time for entertainment. There's a 45-minute program. We'll give you 5 minutes a week. All right. And I produced a 5-minute program with 5 songs in it. So 45 seconds per song, introduced the latest music. And let me now impress everyone and say I've interviewed people like Mick Jagger, George Harrison, Petula Clark, Cliff Richards, and so on and so forth.
So you got a very early and very interesting introduction to the business. And I guess once you got started, there was going to be no stopping you.
Well, you know, it was a dream job. It was something that I had always wanted, and it just fell in my lap. It was difficult because I had to type all the news, boring news. But I was allowed to do a 5 minute, which then expanded to a 15 minute a week program, but all entertainment. And I also used to participate in other programs as a contributor. So yeah, it was just amazing. It was the best 7 years of my life artistically.
And what made you decide to leave there?
Oh, that was... I came to Canada by default. I got married and my husband, ex-husband, lived here. So I had to come here. But as I was leaving the Hindi service, I joined the studio managers, the POA in BBC. I was trained as a studio manager before coming to Canada because I knew that I would not be able to find a job here unless I was a technically oriented person. But even that wasn't possible. There was no job for me here.
Yes, that would be very difficult coming here in 1971 and trying to break into, as we say, the white male-dominated radio industry. So what did you do?
I went to the CBC to have a chat with Mr. Whitehouse. He was the DG at that time, or the head of the Canada, Western Canada operations. And it was very nice to me. He showed me the place. It used to be on Alberni Street. And he said to me, he didn't say that I had a thick accent. It was Sifan, somebody at Sifan who said I had a very thick accent when I applied there. But I was told by Mr. Whitehouse that they did not have any technical jobs available. I mean, CBC in those days, I don't think had anything from Vancouver.
Mostly from the network.
So being very disappointed, I applied at CHQM and got a job as an operator, night operator. And at that time, CJVB had just received its multilingual license, and I was hired by one of the producers who had a contract with the radio station to be his announcer. So that's how I started. But I think soon, within 3 months, CJVB decided that they wanted to keep me as a producer of the programming. And so I was offered 3 hours a week programming. I think I worked with CJVB till 1978. In the meantime, got into television and started the very first TV programs for the South Asian community from Czech TV. 1.5 hours every Saturday morning at 6 o'clock to show Indian movies. Half a movie one Saturday, the other half the other Saturday. So that was my introduction into television, another world that I thought was very exciting. It wasn't until 1984 when the South Asian community here was going through its own problems. Whatever was happening in India was spilling over here. I felt that the community wasn't getting the right picture of what was going on in India, in their homeland. The fundamentalists were giving their own side of the story. The Indian government was spewing their own propaganda. So how were people supposed to know what was really going on? So I do remember talking to Bruno, who used to be with CHQM. I used to do the musicplex. And I remember him saying that he was on a subcarrier frequency of CHQM, and that if I wanted to do that, all I had to do was find an FM station and rent their 92 kilohertz.
What station did you go to get your frequency?
CJJR. My good old friend Harvey Gold used to be there at that time. So Harvey said, sure, you know, let's apply. And we applied to the commission in February 1987. And November 1st, 1987, the very first South Asian radio station, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, outside of India, was here in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Now, the problem with that is there are no receivers. You have to sell people, rent people, give people receivers so they can pick up the SCA.
So, right.
How did you get listeners?
Well, the very first batch of radios got sold to family and friends. So we had 7 people listening to it, including my mother. And I'm thinking, how are we going to make money? But I thought it was for 5 years, I'll do it, and then maybe something else will come up in my life. We did find a company in Houston, Texas, that was making these radios. So I placed an order. It was not until 1990 that, so 2.5, almost 2 years that we were doing programming, not having too much success with people buying these radios, when India had its general election and Rajiv Gandhi was running. We tied up with BBC, Voice of America, and India, and we were giving every hour news bulletins of the election. We had 2,000 people on the waiting list for the radios at that time. So we ordered 2,000 radios from another company that found out that we were interested in buying radios, and they got the radios made in Taiwan. And all the radios came back, and they were all faulty. So here I am, 2,000 people driving me up the wall, no radios. A guy comes up to buy a radio, and I said, sorry, you know, these radios don't work. We've got the shipment in, 2,000 of them. He said, may I have a look at it? So I showed him the radio, and he looked at it. He said, would you want to get them repaired? I said, can you repair them? And he said, yes. Earlier, I had already told the supplier that I was sending all the radios back, and they had said to me, don't send them back, we'll send you another batch, because it was going to cost them more money. So I said, okay. I said to this guy, okay, go ahead and start repairing. So he repaired all 2,000 radios at $10 a radio. So that was money coming into us, which, you know, I was going to throw them away anyway. So instantly, we had 4,000 radios. So that was, I think, the turning point for the station. And I knew this was going to last for a long, long time.
And where were your studios at that time?
We were on Boundary and Hastings. And it was Boza Building. And right above that are the residential suites. So at night, I would have all my reel-to-reels through a timer switch. And you know the timer? It was like the timers that you have on lights.
Yes.
I had the same timers on my machines. So there used to be mice in that building. And at night, the mice would jump on the timer and the timer would go on and there would be religious programming going on at 4 a.m. with the sexy songs going on in the background. And I would get a call saying, the tape is, there's 2 music playing at the same time. So I would get up, run back to the studio, change the reel to reel. It was a fun time though.
The SCA was a good idea, and there are still people using SCA for various things. And down in the States where they have the Ubiquiti system, now they have extra channels that they
can
sell and use for other things. But again, special radios are required. You couldn't get into the car market with SCA.
No.
Nobody made SCA car receivers.
No, and not for Vancouver. Would have worked beautifully in Alberta because of flatland, and it couldn't work here because of the, you know, the hilly area that we have. Having said that, there was an entrepreneurial person who made a car radio here, and it did work pretty okay. So some of the people had it, but by the time I was experimenting with all this, this is now 1996, and an in-language broadcasting from States looked at the British Columbia market. They had a radio station in Ferndale and Bellingham that was not doing well, and they decided they wanted to make it into ethnic and target the South Asian community. So two radio stations started beaming to Vancouver, British Columbia, making my life miserable, because now people could hear Indian programming on a regular radio. They came on 1550 and 1600 AM. That's when we went to the commission and said to them, we've been a Canadian station. You need to give me the same playing field. And I was told to make an application, an AM license.
At that time, basically in Canada, and I remember this well, you could have an English license, you could have a French license. You could not do English and French on the same station. You could do a multicultural station, but you had to have something, I believe it was a minimum of 12 languages.
So, right.
So, wanting to do a station focusing on a certain area of the world, South Asia, and its perimeter states, was something new.
It certainly was.
And an all-Chinese station was something new. Those were in development here in Vancouver at the time.
Well, they paved the way for me to go in front of the commission and say there are two stations, because Chum was bought, the 1320
QMFM AM,
yes. Was bought by James Ho's company, and they made it 100% Chinese except for late at night, 11 o'clock, or weekend programming for other languages. As you're right in saying that minimum of 12 languages had to be done. So I am thinking about this and I'm saying, there's no way that an ethnic service can fly the way we did it with CJVB, 2 hours here, 2 hours there. It's not going to make me money. But I think 14...
Nor will it serve the community.
It wouldn't serve the community. So 1470 and 1320 both went around that problem and started doing 23 hours a day of Chinese language programming and 1 hour a day of other languages, which... Of course, you know, who's listening to it at, you know, 11 o'clock at night. But anyway, having said that, and I looked at it and I thought, I'm not going to lie about it. This is not right. I don't want to do it like that. So when I made the application, my legal counsel said to me, are you sure you want to go ahead with this? And I said, yes, the commission needs to know that this is the way we can make money. This is the way we can serve the community. Mm-hmm. If the company isn't self-sufficient, it cannot serve. So I went ahead and I did Monday to Saturday, South Asian, predominantly Punjabi, Hindi, Urdu, and English. And Sunday, I did languages like Bengali, all Indian languages, plus Persian, which was, you know...
Growing community.
Exactly. And Italian. And so the commission said, why Italian? I said, at that time, the leader of the Congress party in India was Italian. So tongue-in-cheek answer, I think it was our license to lose. We had a very good application. We also made a commitment to the commission that all the languages, apart from ours that we are producing, all the other languages will not have to pay us any money. It would be free to that community.
This took a very long time to finally get the license.
2001 is the very first time when we talked to the commission. Prior to that, we've been talking to them since 1987. And I was always told that I can never get a unilingual license. I'll have to have a multilingual license.
You must have a PhD in red tape busting. Because you went to battle with these people and you battled them for years.
I certainly did.
What was the turning point? How did you finally convince them that Shushma Dat should have a license for an ethnic radio station?
I think there were three components that made it possible for us to have it. I think the mere fact that the two Chinese stations were running and they were catering to the needs of the Chinese community. I think the two American stations that were targeting the South Asian community was another component that the commission looked at it and looked at the years of service that our company had provided to our community and said to us in 2005. I had put in an application in 2001. We'd been talking about it. 2003, final application was submitted. 2005, we get a letter from the commission saying we'll have to open it for competition. And I said, why? And we've been serving.
I've been here.
Yeah, I am.
Look at me,
yeah,
I'm here.
That's right. And the commission said, We'll have to do our due diligence. But if you decide that it should not be open for competition, we will not make a call for it. And I thought to myself, I've waited too long for this. And I was willing for the competition to happen.
And so spent a lot of money, too.
Oh, tons of money. So we had 8 people apply for that, including Rogers and 1320 and Chum.
All the people who weren't interested before all of a sudden saw the way the Lower Mainland was changing.
Yes.
And not be a white enclave anymore.
No.
And now we're at the tipping point where we're at the almost 50%.
It is.
And the they wanted in now that there was money to be made. So how did you deal with that?
Well, our application was very good. Our legal counsel was fantastic. He walked us through it. And I've known him ever since he was an articling student, Chris Weefer. He looked after us. He was very honest about everything. He would say to me, Sushma, whatever you feel should be done for the community, you have to articulate it to the commission. And we did. We had a lovely application. Our competition also had good applications, and I think at that point we realized that I was told by our technical department that the FM frequency wasn't that great, which it isn't. It's an impaired frequency. The only strong frequency that at that time one could see was 1200 AM.
Which has become even stronger with the death of AM stations both in Canada and the States. So now you have a tremendous signal in the Lower Mainland.
It is a very powerful signal. And we were very happy with that. But unfortunately, we are a top 40 music station. And when we got the license, I am thinking that I will pick up the subcarrier and put it on AM. And here my son comes up, who's been in this business with me ever since he was born, and says to me, I don't think that's a good idea. There are already 2 other stations, plus another station was licensed with us. You have to look at the next generation. You have to do programming for them. And I'm thinking, it's not going to make us money. He said, well, are you all about money or are you about the community? And begrudgingly, I must say, at that time, we agreed to make our new station a top 40 AM station and our existing radio station to stay where it is.
So you still have the two?
We still have the two.
What are some of the programs that you are doing now on 1200 and some of the people you have working here?
We have some of the finest broadcasters, people who have been trained at BCIT, people who have been trained at Columbia School of Broadcasting. We've got the morning host, Kuljeet Kela, who comes from Beat, 1130, Virgin. We've got our afternoon host, Angelina Rai, who is a BCIT graduate. The essence of the station is the voice of the second generation kids, Canadian of Indian origin. I had seen them go to all these party halls and dance to Indian music, but they would never listen to an Indian station.
Because there was nothing there for them.
And there was no language. The language barrier was there. Music has no language. But the talking points had to be in English. So we decided that the morning and the afternoon show, the evening show, and most of the shows will have to have English as the language, spoken language, but the music will be South Asian. And that has been a win-win formula for us.
I've heard a lot of commercials on your station, so obviously the business end of it is probably picking up after that nasty quick recession that we had.
Yes, yes.
And you're obviously very successful at what you do, and being, as I said again, probably the only woman station owner, and you've done some controversial things during your time on air, and I'm sure that ruffled some feathers in your own community, because women are really not supposed to be dominant in your society, as they aren't in many societies. You have come out as a very strong, very opinionated, very successful woman.
Well, you know, you look at yourself in the mirror and you say, I'm not all that, but...
Well, I look at plaques and pictures all over here, and even more in boxes in the back room that you need to be hanging up somewhere. People have recognized your contribution, and they have recognized it for years, and you are a success story, and you've obviously got your teeth into this very early, as we talked about at the BBC, and saw the magic of what this business could be, and you've done it. Let's talk about the other portion that you've been involved with for years, and that's television.
Yes.
You got a very early start in television with a couple of channels. I think one of them was a community channel and the other an over-the-air channel.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about how that got started and the type of programming that you're doing there.
Well, we started in 1976, as I said, a morning movie at Czech. And a business guy came up to me and he said, you know, there are no venues for us to promote our product. It was a grocery store. So when we did the morning movie, I remember even young kids tell me now that they were very little and they would get up early in the morning to watch an Indian film. That was exciting. And I think at that point, Western Cable Vision was being bought by Vancouver Cable Vision. So in return, they had to show to the commission that they would be doing something for the community. They came up with doing a multilingual channel. So I was the founding member of that channel in 1979, where we started showing a film every Monday from 6 to 9, and on Thursdays, interviews, what's happening in Vancouver, latest music programs, and dramas. So 5 hours of programming per week, which was unheard of in those days, and I'm talking about 1980, there was an application to the commission for a over-the-air specialty channel. It was called Worldview Pay TV, the mm-hmm. first pay TV channel, which is now Fairchild Television. And that went on for about 2 years, 3 years, I should say, because 1984, when I went to India to interview Mrs. Gandhi, I brought back her interview. It was a controversial time for the South Asian community. 2 months after the interview aired on Worldview Pay TV, I had 3,000 subscribers. The Indian government attacked the Golden Temple. Instantly, we, Worldview Pay TV, lost close to 2,300 subscribers because the Indian community was very upset. 5 months later, Mrs. Gandhi was assassinated.
Some of the programs you're producing now for television?
You know, you asked me earlier, there were things that I was passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
I am passionate about women's rights. I always felt that women got the raw deal from home. Ever since they were a little child to the time they get married, being a mother, a grandmother, so on and so forth. So the very first issue that I took was infant feticide. And I said that should not happen. My tires used to be slashed. Divorce. If a woman needs a divorce, she should have it. You know, horrible life. She should not subject her children to that. So those were some of the issues that I fought for. There's a program that I currently do called Women in Focus. We started that in 2001. We've interviewed over 417 women in that program. And it gives me great pleasure every week to go to a woman's house and talk about her accomplishments, her triumphs, her tribulations, her life, which is full of hope and prosperity and a little bit of a tear there too. So that program is very close to my heart. We do have 3 digital licenses that we want to launch, and we are hoping to launch our first TV channel in March.
That's going to be exciting.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Are you going to be working from the same building, or are you
yes.
building a new facility? Or?
We've got a huge studio in the back, and the programming that we've acquired to run on this channel will be amazing. And we've got editing facilities. We renovated this building. The 2 units are owned by us. We renovated them in 2006. And so it'll house for at least a year some of the people. And then maybe if we are very successful, we'll be able to get a bigger area.
Now, these programmings that you are doing have definitely, I think, made changes in the society of Indo-Canadians. You've been pushing for those changes and showcasing them. So I think that's a great contribution that you've made there. Some of the people you've worked with that you remember over the years, your heroes, your mentors, people who helped you out to get going.
You know, when I was at the BBC, people who worked at the BBC were world-class people. I used to listen to them as a child. To be able to work with them was amazing. Mark Tully is still in India. He was my final boss who pushed me to do whatever I wanted to do, especially with the music scene. I was so interested in music. When I came to Canada, Bill Phillips was a guy that I used to be, I used to admire. Maurice Foisy was another person that I really looked at him and would say, would he ever smile at me and say, Sushma, you did a good job? Many people. And I think being able to work with them side by side, it's amazing, gives you a feeling of belonging, I think.
You have been recognized by just about every charitable organization for which you've done work and donated time. You have a very impressive piece of paper hanging in the lobby, Order of British Columbia, member of the Order of British Columbia. Numerous other honors from various organizations. Who are some of your heroes? You're a hero to a lot of people. Who are some of your heroes? Don't even have to be in broadcasting. Sushma Dhat's heroes.
Women that make their daily work so important that their children and husbands and the community feels fulfilled. When I look at all these women who are from decent families, come out here in Canada and without any shame do any kind of work to support their families, I said to myself, you know, this is amazing. My hat's off to them. I think in any work, in any field, contribution of women most of the time goes unrecognized. May it be in the field of looking after the house or hospitals, you know, corporate world you mentioned in the beginning of the program. I just recently met Tamara Vrooman, who is the president of Van City. What a dynamic woman. You know, you look at people like that and you say, wow, you know, there is young women in my community that are doctors and lawyers and politicians and athletes that make you feel very proud. And I think when I look at people, my mother was a great role model for me. Mrs. Gandhi was a great role model for me. My own son is a great role model for me. People I work with, my staff, I never say they work for me. I always say I work with them. And that's what I like.
That's the proper attitude for a manager and an owner to have, and very few of them have that attitude anymore. You're obviously a very successful, very valuable, and well-loved member of your own community and the greater community at large. Sushma Dhat, thank you very much for sitting down with me today.
Thank you. I love your t-shirt and I want that.